And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Unexpected. No, I'm sorry, The Other Side of Midnight, where the unexpected does happen. In fact, it's happening right now. One of our guests this morning has vanished. We can't find him. So I'm going to have his protege fill in for the time being until we do find him, and hopefully he calls in. I have a number of things at the top of the show I want to go through quickly. So maybe in that time between M and this other individual, we can find my other guest. And you'll never know that anything happened that wasn't supposed to happen unless I had told you. See? So I just told you. Okay, if you go to othersideofmidnight.com and go to upper right-hand corner, click on Radio with Pictures. We have several items tonight in the news. The first one I wanted to highlight is that Ted Cruz, apropos of a suggestion that was made on this show months and months and months ago, has been picked as a running mate for, Carly Fiorina as his running mate in an extraordinary move that has only happened in modern U.S. political history, I think, once, something like 30 years ago, back in 76 when Ronald Reagan was trying to take the nomination away from Gerald Ford. He made the very unusual move of picking his running mate, Senator Richard Swigert from Pennsylvania, and this is never done. You never announce before the convention, and it didn't work very well for Reagan, and we'll see if it's going to work for Cruz. But what I find fascinating, and I'm going to ask my guest later on this evening, my other guest, about this, is that to me this has overtones and aspects of a ritual in this year. So we'll see whether my guest agrees or disagrees, and anyway, we will see. Item number two, Donald Trump today gave a foreign policy speech in Washington and laid out new visions and a more unpredictable strategy for ISIS. And what's unusual about the speech is, if you just look at it kind of very quickly, it looks like a lot of other policy speeches out of Washington. And, of course, the hallmark of Trump is that he's not out of Washington, and he's not like all those other folks. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they can cram this remarkable individual. I mean, Donald Trump has single-handedly upended he and Bernie Sanders, and they're kind of talking about each other back and forth now, have upended this political season like nothing that one could have imagined even months ago. And moving on to item number three, that's not the only area where there are revolutions taking place right before our eyes. Elon Musk this afternoon announced a mission to Mars with his whole private stable of spacecraft and rockets, the Falcons, the Dragons. He's going to send an unmanned mission, not going to send astronauts yet, as soon as 2018. And obviously they're going to do close reconnaissance, take lots and lots of data and pictures, look for landing sites, but it's a private mission to Mars, leaving like within a couple years, year and a half. Fascinating. Now, at the same time that that's going on, across the pond over in Ireland, UK, there's a scientist named McCulloch who believes he has cracked the secret, theoretically, of NASA's so-called impossible fuel-free, get that straight, thruster, the so-called EM drive. As you have known if you followed the show for the last several months, there are this series of experiments conducted around the world back in the 90s by a private individual working for an aerospace company named Roger Scheer, and then moving on to the Chinese, and then to NASA, and then to various do-it-yourselfers. And all of these various experiments by people who are not colluding, a new word in our vocabulary these days, who are not colluding, are all getting the same results. So this damn thing works, except it uses no fuel. And if you have enough electricity, a power source, you know, that runs on a star's energy, solar energy, or, you know, some other power source that's very long-lived, nuclear, it'll run almost forever without fuel. And that leads us, of course, into item number five, which is this superconducting thruster that we've been talking about. Well, item number five, in the last couple of days, physicists have announced a huge flaw in existing superconductor theory. I mean, isn't that intriguingly timed? Because if you look at item number six, That's our superconducting levitation Nasikas thruster project over on Indiegogo. And we have raised in the last few days, as I said, it's almost up by another $1,000 tonight. So go over there, click on that link, you know, chip in $5. You're going to change history, because the Mark II that Paul and Dr. Nasikas are working on is going to, it's going to basically blow everybody's minds, because you'll be able to float down Fifth Avenue. That's what Paul is planning, to float down Fifth Avenue on a hoverboard, a real bona fide 2016 hoverboard forecast 30 years ago by the folks who did Back to the Future. All kinds of change is around us. I mean, this program is devoted to tracking change. We even had James Burke on, who was the epitome of tracking change and connections between various modalities, various phenomenon, various developments, inventions, announcements, trends, what people are doing, community efforts. Those trends, those various dots, are hovering like gnats around a lamppost. And one of the dots I wanted to pursue tonight, as part of this throng of things that are moving at Warp 9 in amazing directions, is the announcement a few days ago that the DEA plans to decide in the next couple of 3 months whether the U.S. will keep its marijuana heroin laws. I'm sorry, will stop treating marijuana like heroin and reduce it on the schedule from a Schedule 1 to another schedule on the listing. Now, to address this, one of my guests tonight is Dr. Robin Falkoff, who is an Oriental medical doctor and a homeopathic physician. Dr. Falkoff has additional training in areas of injection therapy, lifestyle optimizing, nutritional planning, and much more. She consults worldwide on Skype, and you can learn about her 10 years of research into medicine for the future, the light-emitting diode health technologies, by going to her website, healthfreedomrights.com. And because of a variety of reasons, Robin has been following intensely over the last several years progress on the medical marijuana front. And there's a conference taking place, I believe it's this weekend, here in Albuquerque. And we were going to have another guest on to talk about that, who is the actual conference manager. Unfortunately, he seems to have disappeared on us. So, Robin, would you like to fill us in on what's going to happen and why we should be paying attention?
Certainly, Richard. Good to be on with you. Haven't spoken with you in a long time.
Yeah, like 20 seconds ago.
I would say that
about Morella.
I would say that Christian is probably fast asleep, something you can relate to. They have a three-day event going on, and that is starting on Friday. And their event is the 2016 Duke City MCC Medical Cannabis Convention, starting Friday from 4 to 9 p.m., Saturday 10 to 10, long day, and Sunday 10 to 4 p.m.
Yeah, if I can interrupt, if you go to othersideofmidnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures, and scroll down past my stuff, past Robin's bio, there's a graphic there, a clickable graphic, to the conference itself. Takes you to the hotel site, it takes you to where the conference is being held, takes you to surrounding communities. It's their website, and just click on it, and that will take you directly to the conference web.
Yes, that's the banner that I copied and pasted successfully. I was very proud of myself to get that to your producer, M. I thought, okay, universe, something that's worth. It is a monumental job putting this together, and he and his partner are going to be doing these events twice a year. And what I love about this, it's for the patients. It's for the people that are getting their cannabis cards, trying to be able to figure things out. What do you do? What's available? And, you know, the one thing I take issue with is this big pushing people into the CBDs. They have a definite place, and that's an isolated cannabis plant that is wonderful for those with, let me see if my sound is up. Here's my sound. Is it better? That's wonderful for those who have seizure disorders or severe pain conditions. but it works even better with the THC component, and there are ways to avoid the effects that people are concerned about, the psychoactive effects, and that can be done with suppositories. It is very easy and so simple, but that's, you know, the topic of another show. But that's the focus because that's what has been legal, and right now, aside from that scheduling, it is also a possibility. Was cracking down on the CBDs. So, yeah, I have no idea, guys. My setup is totally the same, unless this is breaking down. But, okay, let me see if everything's plugged in tight.
So it's just you're sounding just a tad muffled, that's all.
Okay. Well, I've got the mic picked up.
Okay, that sounds better. Yes, that sounds better.
Okay. Okay. So, anyhow, that's what the current issue is, as I see it, and a lot of people hopped on the bandwagon about CBDs, Richard, so they can make money. And they could make money because the government was allowing them to be selling those products. So now we're looking at something,
you and I watched them together. We saw, you know, the CNN specials, which featured massively CBDs, so people taking their cues from television. It's kind of like looking at medical commercials in all these programs. People go to their doctor and say, hey, doc, I want so-and-so because they saw it on television. So CBDs became the acronym of the hour because of CNN and Sanjay Gupta.
Right. And what I said to you at that time, obviously, Gupta is pushing for CBDs. And because he's doing that, you know, it's to cut out the cannabis, the psychoactive component, THC, because that's what the government doesn't want out there. You and I have had discussions about that for years, as others have. There's a big resistance to psychoactives, to anything that can get people thinking outside the box, big time. So what we're looking at is that situation, and I'm hoping they're having different speakers at this event, and let me get their page up. And okay, I don't want to type in the ear of the people on your show.
Oh, we can do that. Come on.
We can. Wow. Yes. Okay, gangbusters.
I mean, how can you do radio with pictures without typing?
Okay.
The Duke City Medical Cannabis Convention on Facebook.
Yes, so. Indeed. And I've got it. I've got it for us right here, and this is up. And obviously, we're on the same bandwidth, you and I. So, here we go. They have a whole schedule of events that are going on, and as I said, this is their second one. They have another one coming up in October, so it's a pretty impressive undertaking. As to their schedule, I had seen that earlier today for what's going on, but I can get to that. But the bottom line, it's a wonderful opportunity for people to get exposure, to understand, to be guided through the whole process about applying for a cannabis card, which is legal use of medical cannabis, applying for a grower's card, where you have a certain requirement that you must comply with. All of this is legal in the state of New Mexico. Now, so they take you through that. They will have information there about the different types of cannabis. A couple of the dispensaries will be present there. They'll be talking about the edibles. And there's a lot that people need to learn so that they don't get unexpectedly knocked on their behind.
Who was that reporter, columnist for the New York Times? Maureen Dowd. the day that Colorado legalized cannabis, she went to Denver. Went to her hotel room. She apparently bought a bunch of edibles, and she took them back, and she ate all of them. And she said, she wrote in her column, this is, you just Google this, she spent the next 3 days in a fetal position in her bed in her hotel room. I mean, Maureen Dowd doesn't sound very smart. So
read the label, Richard. It's on the label.
Well, yeah. So given that cannabis now is on everybody's lips, pun intended, these kind of conferences are crucial to giving people ground floor information without hype, without, you know, salesmanship. about basically how to wander around in this whole new world, right?
Definitely. And that's what they're doing. So, and they have their number of free seminars relating to the industry itself, and they will have doctors there to explain to people about their conditions that are able to apply to get their cannabis cards. So it's wonderful. I will be interviewing people there. I'll see what's going on. I'm hoping we can both go over, because this is something people need to learn more about. We need to unite. I was in Colorado last week, and that's a separate thing that I hope to cover on your show. I'm having one of the growers who I met, who is doing amazing work. the things that I saw when I was up there are just incredible. They are state of the art. And
well, we have a little time. Why don't you go into some of them now? Because people need to understand why going to this conference is important. You know, it may be that marijuana and you will never cross paths, like, you know, Bill Clinton. It may be that someone in your family really needs it, and you don't know how much you need it until you know you need it. But it would behoove a lot of people listening to us, you know, particularly here in New Mexico, to wander over tomorrow to this conference. Not tomorrow, but it's on what, Friday,
no,
Saturday?
Tomorrow's Thursday.
I know.
But tomorrow for you is Friday.
Right. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And if you want to get the straight skinny, where better to get it than from people who are actually doing this and doing it under opposition? The reason I find the DEA announcement so interesting is because it looks like the Obama administration, before they leave office, are going to leave the states as laboratories unfettered by this onerous federal legislation, which has made even research by non-government agencies into cannabis illegal.
Yeah, definitely. This was under discussion when I was with the Colorado Cannabis Growers Association people. Wonderful people. Oh, my gosh. I've learned so much. These people are incredibly knowledgeable about exactly how people can learn the best way for them to interface with this amazing plant. As many in the that have been using psychoactive compounds, they understand there's an actual awareness to the mushrooms, to the plants, and it's something that you're interacting with. And I was very eager to learn more about that.
You mean there's a resonance between prospective consumers and particular strains of marijuana?
There's a resonance, and there's a consciousness that has been verified by many people taking the psychoactive mushrooms, that they find this same awareness, and they describe the same experience. So that's pretty profound when they're describing the same thing. These are all topics for other shows because they're way too big, Richard. We could just mention them, but they are so big and so fascinating. And I was fortunate to just get an understanding, you know, on a level without consuming anything, but just looking at the different strains.
They did give you what's called the tingle test, right?
Well, the smell test. It was a smell test. But as I said,
you have to describe what happens when you, in other words, it's basically like, here we have come, folks. We're now discussing sampling, looking at, sniffing, taking aroma tests of strains of marijuana like sommeliers do with wine.
So they
presented you with this sampling, and what happened?
Yeah, except it's not like wine, because what you're looking for is that connection that you get a sensation where I was told you'll feel the hairs on the back of your neck actually stand up. And I didn't quite get that, but I must have tried inhaling, you know, and it's not inhaling like you're inhaling smoke or anything, just, you know, from my nose, you know, breathing these different aromas, and they're very fragrant and very unique. And some of them, it's like, nothing. And then one, you know, my eyes perk up, and it's like, oh, I could feel this tingling in my brain. And I thought, well, that's different. And there were a couple out of the 25 that I had that kind of reaction. So my assignment was to come back and check out different products at dispensaries, you know, and then see, you know, what it would be that I would resonate with. So that's it in a nutshell. We can explore that later because there's so many components and details and fragrances. It's mind-blowing, and the sophisticated knowledge that these people have, it would blow you away. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, they're just a bunch of stoners. No way. This is science. This is the science of light and its application, the science of managing the environment where the plants are growing to create different effects, different strains, different compounds that are part of the cannabinoids. You can tweak that, or rather they can tweak that because I've got a lot to learn, but it's that comprehensive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you've done intensive research over the last, half decade now into marijuana and its various medical usages. Given that you're now meeting with people that are on the ground, pun intended, growing this stuff, meeting the demand, what are some of the major questions that the consumers and the growers have for each other in terms of this whole new industry? Because this could become bigger than the big pharma.
Richard, you don't have time in 9 minutes. I've got a grower who's going to be on with me Monday morning. I have a friend of mine who will be on Thursday. She's a woman entrepreneur who's doing growing for compassionate use. She's built up a multi-million dollar business, quite an amazing lady. And we will be speaking with her as well. And then I'll have the guys who are putting on this event, Christian and his partner John, they'll be on the show on Friday morning as well.
So if people go to othersideofmidnight.com, Radio with Pictures, or scroll down to Dr. Falkov's section tonight, there's a link there to freedomslips.com Studio A. That's your radio show every morning, 5 days a week.
Excuse me, Richard, that's the network where they can listen. The radio show is Event Horizons. And our home is at freedomslips.com in Studio A. So, yeah, Monday through Friday from 10 to noon Eastern time. And it's we've got a lot going on, and then we'll be doing more with you on your show where we can really get into it and explore the greater details. So, yeah, very, very exciting. So did you want to touch briefly on the political stuff?
Yes, of course. I know you're dying to. So you have a few minutes to the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
Robin wants to come on and talk about her Donald winning 5 primaries yesterday.
5 primaries and every single precinct in 5 states, something that has never before been seen. Newt Gingrich was interviewed by Sean Hannity yesterday, and it was quite funny the way Hannity said, well, so do you think Donald will get the nomination? And Gingrich did a real slow turn to him and looked at him, and he said, he's got the nomination with this. And also what has taken place with all 5 precincts, all 5 states in every precinct won by him, it has never been seen before. So this puts to rest the spin and the lies put out by the mainstream media, by the other political, you know, in the bag with their supporters and their corporate sponsors, with the hate mongering about Donald. Because if all these women didn't like Donald Trump, I didn't know that those 5 states were made up of all men. You know, I mean, it makes the point, and I will have, I'm trying to think, Friday after the guys, I have this lovely blonde lady. If you were watching the interview with Greta, there was a woman who stood up and talked about her father's business and asked Donald about that, and she'll be on the show as well. Her name is Kelly, and she's a beautiful lady, very well-spoken, very bright, and we're going to be talking about women for Trump. But his speech, did you get to see that yet, Richard?
No, unfortunately. And I didn't even see a very long synopsis because people were picking and choosing and I was getting ready for tonight.
No, watch it. I recorded it. It might be a little jumpy. There are 2 segments.
Well, I wasn't interested that the chairman of the House Committee on Foreign Relations actually said there were very important points in the speech, unlike an awful lot of other pundits who were criticizing various aspects. Now, it's important to note that this is a congressman from a state that Donald Trump won in the primary. So politics is following function. A politician actually looking at a guy who won his state, he's chairman of a powerful committee, and instead of saying no to Mr. Trump, he's saying, we can talk. It's interesting how the process is working, because all the people that Trump has organized, because it's not just Trump, it's all the people voting for him. Something like 10 million folks now have voted for Donald Trump in this primary season.
The biggest turnout for Republicans ever. Now, there's a very important point that what you were talking about, I'd like to expand, because the only candidate that brought up the 28 missing pages of the 9/11 report that much of the commentary has said include actions that were taken by the Saudis, and we know what just happened with the Saudis threatening to pull $750 billion from the United States, taking their money out of oil dollars. And lo and behold, Obama is there in Saudi Arabia. He was there, you know, but what launched all of this in motion was Donald Trump. He has been doing this with issues, and suddenly they're being picked up by others, and suddenly they're saying, oh, you know, he is aware of what's going on in the world. You know, all the naysayers are just being proven wrong every which way. So he launched that about the 28 pages, and now the Obama administration is claiming that they might be releasing some of that information. Excuse me, we have to see what happens with that. But it is amazing to watch this metamorphosis of the political arena, the exposure of the corruption, of the outright insanity that we look at people based on what their positions are, how do they align with us, and what we want is our future. We put them in office, they are elected, and suddenly crossing that threshold, they become something else in their own minds. And they manage to convince a lot of other people, and they form private parties, and those parties shut out the voices of we the people.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left here. Keith has been able to post the Day of Learning seminars at the cannabis conference. So if you go back to Radio with Pictures, quickly look down that. Give us the address again, the web address. Talk about your show, or some of these people that are going to be at the conference are going to be on your show. And that will do us for this segment.
That's perfect. Thanks, Richard. Okay, so this is the Duke City Medical Cannabis Convention. Just type Duke City Medical and you'll get it pulled up on Facebook. It's at the Elegant Hotel in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And it's 4 to 9 on Friday, 10 to 10 Saturday, and 10 to 4 p.m. on Sunday. My show is Event Horizons. I'm on Monday through Friday from 10 to noon Eastern Time. Our home is at freedomslips.com, and we are in Studio A, and I have guests. The two gentlemen who put together the cannabis convention will be on with me Friday. First hour, second hour will be Kelly, who I was mentioning was at the event in Indiana with Greta Van Susteren, and more guests coming up next week about cannabis. It's in everybody's awareness now what's going on and the changes.
Wonderful, so. Wonderful. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. Keith's going to pop some music up here any moment now. I want to thank Dr. Robin Falkoff for filling in for our mysterious guest, who's obviously so stretched out from organizing these conferences, and I know what kind of a deal that is. That he missed his cue tonight, his call. But, in fact, Robin filled in brilliantly, as she normally can do.
Wow.
My name is Richard C. Hoagland. You're on the other side of midnight, and we shall return.
You said you wanted to be just right. I just want to take you home tonight. I will take you to the rising fall. We'll be right back.
back on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning for the rest of the program, and I want to thank Robin for filling in. It turns out that her guest, the guy who's doing the conference, has to be up at the crack of dawn because of an ABC interview at 8 o'clock in New York, which would make it really at the crack of dawn here. So that's obviously what happened, and I certainly want to thank Robin for filling in eminently and giving us the information that we need. So My guest for the rest of the show this morning is someone I really wanted to talk to for some time. His name is Mark Passeo, or Passeo. I think it's Passeo. He's an independent researcher, a public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, radio talk show host. I guess everybody's doing it these days. Conference organizer and freedom activist from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the city of brotherly love, which this summer is going to be ground zero for one of the most interesting political events on the planet, but we're not going to get distracted there. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling a vast amount of research in areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies, and in 2007, he began presenting this information in a forum of presentation series entitled What on Earth is Happening? With the intention of bringing the implications of this body of knowledge to greater public awareness. Mark has launched his own website in 2008 at whatonearthishappening.com. In 2010, he began hosting his own internet radio show, as he said a moment ago, also called What on Earth is Happening, which has over, I don't believe this, 195 episodes to date. Come on, somebody wrote that just for me tonight. Anyway, Mark is one of the co-founders of the Free Your Mind Conference, the Philadelphia-based conference on consciousness, mind control, and the occult. He has taught intensive live seminars, including natural law, the real law of attraction, and how to apply it in your life, New Age BS and the suppression of the sacred masculine, streetwise spirituality, and demystifying the occult. Mark Passeo, you'll correct me, I hope. Welcome to the other side of midnight.
Richard, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here tonight. It is Passeo.
Ah, Passeo. Like Passover, we're in the middle of. Okay, I do these little mnemonic things to remember. You know, when you get to be beyond a certain age, you find that if you learn one new little thing, you have to forget something. It's very, very, you know, very time-consuming. So let's see, where should we begin? I'll tell you what, I want to go into our conversation this morning through the marijuana doorway.
Sure.
There was a reason why when Robin suggested that I open the show tonight with a discussion of this conference here in town, I said yes, because A, I'm going to go over with her probably on Saturday and check things out, and I'll tell everybody what I found when we come back next week. But more important, I'm seeing this state-by-state rolling de-legalization. Is that the right term? You know what I mean. As kind of an interesting experiment in consciousness where American society is beginning to wake up to the fact that for the last however many decades since these prohibitions went into place, the real reasons for keeping marijuana and cannabis illegal is not because people will go out and kill people, people will drive, you know, stoned and they'll kill people, people will, you know, run mad like the movie Reefer Madness in the 30s was depicting. It's that people will become more sensitized. They'll look around, they'll begin to ask questions about the matrix we're in, and that is, of course, what government could not possibly countenance moving into the 20th century because of all the what was coming. So that's my theory, that's my model. Where are you on that model?
I absolutely agree. I think cannabis certainly is a psychoactive plant and has the potential of altering consciousness and elevating it and helping people to think outside the box and outside of the socially engineered status quo of human thought. And this is what the social engineers, this is what the powers that should not be in our world that are currently entrenched and completely corrupt and destroying human freedom. They don't want people thinking outside of that box. They want people's minds well controlled, and cannabis has freeing potential for the mind. And that is why we've seen this demonization of it, even though it is one of the most curative and beneficial plants for human health. They're trying to basically keep people from using the psychoactive component, as Robin was saying, and that's why the CBD cannabinoid is being pushed as opposed to THC. So I definitely think more and more people are learning about the health benefits of cannabis, and especially about its curative properties for a host of diseases, not the least of which is cancer. All forms of cancer have been treated with THC essential oil. So this is certainly the main reason, not only the fact that the cancer industry is a multi-billion dollar a year industry throughout the world, but they not only want to suppress it for that reason, but they want to suppress it because of the power that cannabis has long-term to essentially change human thought for the better by elevating consciousness and helping people to realize that a lot of the things that they previously believed weren't true, and to break out of that shell of low consciousness and start to wake up, so to speak. And that's what the powers that be, that's the last thing that the powers that be in this world want.
Okay, that leads me to this question, which of course is a question I've asked a lot of people when they come on the show. I ask myself, what was the moment in your life, looking back at your childhood, looking back at being a young man, looking back however far you have to look back, what was that point where you looked around and you said, there's something wrong? It's not the way I'm being told.
That's a very, very good question and a very interesting one, especially because my background is certainly not the average or the norm of the everyday person. So I became involved in a very different path than most people in my younger years. When I was in my early 20s, I got involved with dark occultism. And I was kind of...
The hardcore stuff?
Satanism, to be specific.
Okay.
So,
blood on the floor, candles, the whole thing?
Rituals, everything. With people in high positions of power in the world, in just about.
Oh, so right out of Eyes Wide Shut.
Richard?
Yes. Hello? I thought I heard someone there. Mark, are you
no
there?
No worries. I'm still here.
Okay.
So, you know, I was put through a lot of religious indoctrination when I was young. I'm not from a strict religious background, but just a typical, Catholic background from South Philadelphia. And my family and friends and teachers, they were kind of all people who just kind of accepted the status quo, never really questioned too much. I was indoctrinated into what I now consider to be pretty dogmatic beliefs. But because I couldn't kind of put the religious indoctrination into perspective with higher knowledge back then, it kind of turned to a lot of resentment and hatred for what I considered was certainly not being told the truth. And so I gravitated toward the what I considered then the polar opposite, the opposite extreme, which was Satanism and dark occultism in general. And I started to espouse what you would call the satanic ideology, which I could get into later, explain what that is if you'd like. But some of my work was recognized by a person named Anton LaVey, which I was basically writing in writing articles in fanzines, and I was publishing music that espoused this ideology.
And who is Anton LaVey?
He was the head of an organization in California called the Church of Satan, and it's a low-level satanic organization, which essentially acts as kind of a filtration system to take people up and groom them in the higher levels of what I call the worldwide satanic hierarchy.
So it's the same kind of collection mechanism as Scientology, as Sung Young Moon, the Moonies.
Sure.
All of these cults use the same almost business model to collect their sheep.
Yes, they have an interface with the public at low levels, and then it leaves the public domain at higher levels and goes up into high positions of influence and power in our society behind the scenes.
I always love the catchphrase of Sung Young Moon, Dr. Moon. when they would meet you at airports, they'd meet you on the streets in Berkeley where I lived at the time, and they'd be smiling, they'd hand you these things, and all the time I was remembering, you know, as I'm looking and talking with these people who are representatives of the Mooney organization, his famous, you know, line, which was, anything is possible in terms of heavenly deception. In other words, they could tell you anything because their job was to recruit you.
That's right. And this is what some of these lower level organizations are trying to do. They're trying to identify traits and characteristics among the population that they can exploit to their advantage in the pursuance of their agenda of control over society and the destruction of freedom in society. When I recognize that, you know,
so wait a minute. Are you saying it's that big and that organized, or are we looking at little fiefdoms of individuals, lost souls, for want of a better term, who kind of gravitate to prescriptions of power?
And I would say that certainly happens in separation in these lower level groups, but I would say that these groups filter into what you would call a hierarchy, a worldwide hierarchy, which is a network of dark occultists, a priest class, if you will, that is ultimately at the highest levels of all the institutions. They all come together at a top level of knowledge.
When you say institutions, what institutions are we talking about?
You name the human institution or endeavor, and Satanist represented power interests within those institutions: education, media, banking, politics, law, military, law enforcement, technology, medicine. Every single institution.
Disney?
Entertainment, without a doubt. Definitely.
Okay.
So there were some.
Satanists
were in positions of power in all of these institutions, being around them, even in this lower level organization. So you can imagine, you know, where this hierarchy goes as it basically leaves public interface and, goes up to behind the scenes levels of power.
Okay, so let me get this very clear. You're talking about a systematic recruitment and program, satanically organized, that is coordinated worldwide with feeder groups at the local level to get the sheep into the cattle pens, mixing our metaphors. And you say this goes up in a hierarchy and ultimately winds up with people at the highest levels of institutions, public institutions we would recognize worldwide as being part of this system?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I just want to get your model out there, you know, because then we can look at evidence, which, of course, leads to my next question. Where's the evidence for this massive global conspiracy?
Well, you could look at ritual groups like the Bohemian Club and how they have people who essentially gather there on a yearly basis from the highest levels of politics, the highest levels of media, the highest levels of banking, the highest levels of entertainment. And they all essentially gather there to further their agenda and their common interests, again, which is the goals that they were working towards. See, I thought that that occultism in general was only about individuals trying to work with hidden knowledge, which is what the occult means. The word occult simply means hidden from sight.
Mm-hmm. Tell us who's doing the hiding.
That's right. These occultists are hiding knowledge about not only how the human mind works and how our motivations and desires work, but they're hiding knowledge of the laws of nature. They're hiding real science from people and giving them, you know, false forms of science and false information so that they can ultimately be easier to control. When you create a knowledge differential, you create a power differential. And that's how they basically keep their power, is by keeping other people ignorant of the real information that they know, not only about the human psyche, but about ultimately about the laws of nature and how they operate. So they're in an interconnected way. I mean, you could look at organizations like Skull and Bones, which have clear long-term connections to intelligence organizations, especially here in the United States. You look at organizations like the Bohemian Club, and again, high-level politicians have been initiated into the Bohemian Club and groomed for positions of power later on. And many other organizations that feed into religious groups at a high level. You know, I mean, you can look at secret societies like Opus Dei, or you can look at, you know, the Knights of Malta. I mean, their interconnections go on and on as far as secret societies and occult organizations go. Again, the aspect that I became involved with was Satanism as a way of being, as an ideological way of living in the world, which has its specific tenets. And I think they're descriptive of the tenets of dark occultism in general. And essentially, it's total selfishness to the point of being willing to step on other people's rights if it advances your power. And many people in our everyday society have this this mentality. You know, they give us a form of their religion, is how I like to explain it to people. They try to indoctrinate us into their mindset, into their frame of mind. They've given us their thinking societally, but albeit at a lower level, and never giving it the name Satanism. You know, when you say Satanism to people, they always think of the Christian concept of the devil biblically, but they never think of it as an ideological way of living in the world, which is what Satanism really is. They just give it the name because they want to associate it with the adversarial aspect of nature, you know, which is what the word Satan means, the adversary or opposer. Really, it's runaway egotism. It's pure selfishness divorced from any morality. One of the main tenets of it is moral relativism. It is, not accepting that there is any such thing as an objective difference between right and wrong behavior, that we can arbitrarily decide what is right or what is wrong.
Okay, let me ask a couple of base questions here then.
Sure.
Is it your position that the occult by definition is evil?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's
very important to get on the record.
Without a doubt.
So there is good occultism and dark or bad occultism. Okay.
I would word it like that. However, I kind of have a slightly different take that I think occult just means hidden. And
right.
What they're hiding is knowledge about not only how the human mind ultimately operates, but how the laws of nature at a higher level operate, especially when it comes to moral laws.
Did you ever see the 1950s classic Forbidden Planet?
A long time ago, I did this.
I recommend strongly go look at it again, and everybody listening, go look at it again. Because here's the question that proceeds from it. The central thesis of Forbidden Planet was an Earth expedition finds a distant planet, the fourth planet from Altair in the constellation of Aquila the Eagle. And they go there and they find a survivor of a previous expedition, Dr. Morbius, who has been able to figure out the language, the hieroglyphs of this incredible, super advanced Type II civilization that was resident in the solar system and on this planet. And he has developed certain technologies and certain understandings from what the Krell, that's the name of the species, left to anybody who wandered by. And the decision in the film is, does that knowledge, is it safe to import that knowledge to Earth, to human beings with the frailties of of whoever we are?
Are they responsible enough to accept
exactly
that?
And the message demonstrating the Krell were not is absolutely not. At the end of the film, the planet. Well, I won't go into the details. It's a really amazing film for 1956. here's the point of it. Is there, in terms of the good occultists, those that know that we're dealing with a metaphysical technology, a science and a technology which, if you understand, like any science, if you understand how it works, you can make it work. The problem is that it's so simple to make it work that even people who you wouldn't possibly give a weapon to, a gun, a knife, a nuclear weapon, whatever, would be able to, in their garage, recreate this power if this wasn't kept secret, and right. basically decimate the human race in so many different ways, it isn't funny. In other words, is there a plausible, positive reason for keeping some of this knowledge that we call the occult actually hidden from general knowledge and view because it's not meant for us? We cannot handle it safely. We're not responsible enough.
I feel that that is one of the justifications that many dark occultists use for trying to keep it out of people's hands. I don't feel that the knowledge of the occult really can or would be used for that kind of destruction. I think that this is ultimately the highest level knowledge of occultism is moral knowledge. It's the knowledge of the objective difference between right and wrong behavior, or what is known as natural law.
I was just going to ask you, you've done a study of natural law. What, according to your background, is natural law, and why should we care?
Well, natural law essentially is it's universal, non-man-made, binding and unchangeable conditions that ultimately are in place in nature and govern the consequences of the behavioral choices, whether they are moral or immoral. Intelligent beings.
How do we learn of these natural laws?
We ultimately can learn them by their effects that our behaviors produce in our lives and in the individually and in the aggregate in society. So just like any other science, they have observable results. These laws have observable results. Asking how we can understand how natural law or moral law works is like asking how can we understand how gravity works.
Well, I just want to be clear, because you're saying then that no big guy is going to appear in the sky and give us, you know, tablets with these laws on them.
That's right.
They're basically figured out by human beings, by fallible human beings, as part of a process of understanding real information from fake information. You could call it science, you can call it rigorous organized
right.
knowledge, whatever. And but basically the filter is ultimately fallible human beings in figuring out what is natural law. So what makes this different than what science is trying to do ostensibly for the last several hundred years?
I would say it is no different. I would call natural law a science. It is not a religious belief system whatsoever and requires no belief. In other words, if you throw a ball off the top of a roof of a house and it moves toward the ground, that's a law that's in effect. And
Wait. It is a pattern. You observe
yes.
a pattern. You have to make leaps to assume laws, because that assumes that every time you do something, the same thing's going to happen. Well, in other cultures in previous centuries and millennia, people didn't have this automatic assumption that the same thing they did today would have the same results tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, we can see this in the erection of huge monuments to sunrises. It's like they put these markers in place, like Stonehenge and other places, to basically keep the sun ritually rising where it was supposed to, because if they didn't, their perception was natural law doesn't exist, everything is helter-skelter and random, and seeking the pattern, discerning the pattern, was the beginnings of science, of the idea that we weren't subject to an irascible and totally unapproachable God right. force that just arbitrarily decided our fate moment to moment.
And this is what I talk about when I get into my work on human consciousness, because I sort of define consciousness as the ability to recognize patterns within nature, the ability to recognize patterns that exist around us.
Well, that's one of the abilities of consciousness. I mean,
sure.
Ultimately, consciousness recognizes its own existence, its own ability to recognize patterns. So it's the awareness of the awareness of the awareness.
Of self, that's right.
Of self, yes, self-awareness.
And the awareness of natural law is a huge part of what the dark occultist, or what I like to call the priest class that's ultimately right now in control of this planet, that's the most occulted knowledge. That's the knowledge that they are trying desperately to keep people from making the recognition of.
Which is?
which is the observable difference between right behavior and wrong behavior, which when we, in a societal sense, act a certain way in the aggregate, produces an invariable result in society. So in other words, as a society behaves more morally in the aggregate, that society receives more freedom in the aggregate. As morality increases, freedom increases. And as morality wanes in the aggregate in society, freedom declines and slavery takes over. And this is the fundamental realization that the priest class that is in control does not want people to recognize, because if they recognize this and they truly understand the difference in action, in behavior, between right behavior and wrong behavior, we could start using our free will to choose wisely between those two modalities of behavior and therefore change the result that we're receiving.
Now, are you thinking in terms of a field, a kind of a group consciousness of moral people making selections, making decisions that bend the curve for the rest of human beings along with the so-called leadership, the spiritual leadership?
No, I wouldn't say it's dependent on a small group of people. I think the aggregate of society has to ultimately make a shift in consciousness. That's why.
But there's so much inertia there. So much. 7 billion people, most of whom are not aware of anything beyond the nearest hill.
That's why this is called the great work.
So hold it there. We're at the top of the hour. Let's take a break. Let's think about this. Keith will pick some interesting music and we'll have a little background to think. We're talking about good and evil and terms. Is something which is hidden, is that evil? Should everybody know everything? We'll pick this up on the other side. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. My guest this morning is Mark Passio. We're discussing some pretty big questions. We'll return to that discussion right after this. And we are back on the other side of midnight. It's around 55 degrees out there tonight. And there's another gorgeous gibbous moon, slowly waning 13 degrees per day. It's still out there. It's still gorgeous. Okay, Mark, we're talking about good and evil. Do you believe those fundamental concepts really exist? And are they abstract, or is there a persona behind them?
Absolutely, they exist. And they are the results of natural law consequences. When we choose between either a higher consciousness vibratory energy or a low consciousness vibratory energy, what you might call either love or fear, that sets effects into the universe. It sets effects into our lives. When we are in a higher frame of consciousness, of awareness, we're going to choose wisely between whether we're going to put our actions into effect in a moral capacity or in an immoral one. And by that, I simply mean, you know, are we going to take behaviors that uplift other people and don't cause harm to others? Or are we going to continue to do things that ultimately are harmful to others, that result in, you know, the degradation of other people and ultimately a loss in freedom? Is an action based in freedom or coercion? Is it based in voluntary interaction and exchange with others, or is it based in coercion and theft? And if you look at our society, it's structured around coercion and theft. And as we make these moral choices at an individual level, we're receiving an effect in society. Those individual behaviors add up in the aggregate sense, and ultimately either good, or what we would consider order, is created societally, or evil, or what we would consider chaos, gets created societally. So the observable effect is the proof that natural law is in effect, because all you have to do is ask yourself the question, what are we observing? What are we seeing in our lives? What are we seeing in our world, in our society? Are we seeing a society that's based in order? Is it based in freedom? You know, is it moving toward ever
Well, when you say natural law, presumably you're taking natural from nature.
You know, the
natural world around us.
Non-man-made.
The ecosystem, the geology, the forces of the atmosphere, all life forms, the interaction of these webs of life. But when you look at natural law, it's pretty, you know, tooth and claw. It's dog eat dog. It's the survival of the fittest. It is incredibly competitive. And there's little, if any, cooperation, certainly across species. So when you contrast that background with laws of men, the laws of men for the last several thousand years, according to the record, we've tried to humanize nature. We've tried to humanize the human condition, life, the length of life, the quality of life. Now, human law is designed to compete with and to defeat the aspects of natural law that basically had us dying in our teens.
Yeah, I think that's the main difference between natural law and man's law. Man's law is arbitrary. It changes based on location. It changes based on time. It's not set in stone. It's not objective. It's something that is subjective, and it operates at the whim of the people who are writing those laws. This is not something that natural law is not a reflection of a Darwinistic theory of survival of the fittest by any stretch of the imagination.
How is it?
People
not?
Should not see it as such. They should really understand it as it's operating from the highest level of creation. It's operating from a level of pure consciousness. This is the field of energy.
Oh, say when you say highest level of creation, are we talking God?
It's God's law. Yeah, I have no problem with that term. Many individuals may or would.
Well, when we think of God, we think of a conscious being, an entity, an individual, someone who, you know, can talk to us if he happens to want to.
I'm not here to tell anyone how to think of God. So that is up to the individual to conceptualize what they see as the creative force. I simply see it as the underlying intelligence that underlies all of nature. You know, what makes the stars go around the center of the galaxy? What makes planets revolve around their respective suns? These are forces that are at work in nature, and we didn't set them in motion. Some force did, and that's the force that I'm talking about here.
Well, if we go back to the definition of consciousness as self-awareness, the being is aware that they exist, that they're alive, that they're asking these questions.
Right.
Then the difference between a universe which is dead and sterile and operating according to unconscious physical laws versus one which is alive and aware and conscious and experimenting with various whatever just because it doesn't want to get bored. Can you imagine being an eternal being and being bored for eternity? That's got to be hell.
Absolutely.
To be bored forever? I mean, come on. So,
these
definitions are very important.
Yeah, it will create different expressions to know and understand itself. But ultimately, there is...
So would such a God, to keep itself from being bored, invent evil, invent an adversary, invent the opposition, invent a polarity to basically have a tension, a creative tension, so boredom never enters the equation again forever, for as long as an infinite being could live, the permutations of that tension built into the furniture ensure unending soap opera?
Well, I don't think it necessarily has to be unending drama. I think instead of creating evil, what the underlying creative force created was free will. That's the dynamic. That's what you might call the randomness component. Whereas then it interoperates with the deterministic component of the universe, which is natural law. See, these two worldviews, the randomness worldview and the deterministic worldview, always have been competing in human minds for centuries. But really, there's two different dynamics that play off against each other. One is a random component. You might see it as a random component because it's up to us to choose. We have free will as intelligent beings, and we have the ability to choose our behaviors. We can choose one way, we could choose another way, and depending on that choice, we'll receive a specific result. We make a different choice, we receive a different result. Then there's a deterministic component, which is the laws that are ultimately governing the result of the choice that we make. So in other words, if you choose to drive your car on an empty road, you know, you're probably not going to get into an accident. But if you choose to drive it into a road that has all kinds of, you know, blocks and debris and, you know, walls even, or trees in the middle of the highway, it's probably a bad choice, and you're probably going to end up with a chaotic result. So it's like a choice. Which road do you go down? And, you know, that free will that we ultimately have to base our decision making upon ultimately gives us the ability to create, to co-create consciously together and create a different result if we so choose. Right now, I would say that people are so unaware of how these laws work, and they're almost dismissive of our free will, that they are unwisely co-creating. They're not co-creating the reality that we're experiencing at a conscious level. They're doing it at a completely unconscious level. And when you create anything at an unconscious level, you're going to get a chaotic result. You're not going to get the result that you say you want. You're going to get what you might call the de facto result or the default result. It's like a computer program where you leave all the default settings checked and then expect it to work the way you want it to work. Well, things don't work that way. There are requirements for getting what we want out of reality, out of life. And that is to understand not only how we work ourselves, but how the laws of nature work so that we can put out, you know, good decision-making processes and then good behaviors that ultimately create what we say we want for ourselves, which is goodness and order.
So how do you see dark occultism entering into this kind of pastoral picture? Because you're painting a picture where we are born in ignorance and we have to kind of figure out natural law and do things in accordance with it. But you say that there's also a destructive force, an adversary, a consciousness, which is deliberately distracting us, deceiving us, lying to us about the way things really work?
The priest class that is in operation basically wants to be God. That's what Satanism is ultimately all about.
You're not saying that Satan is a being. You're saying it was created absolutely by the priests as a good corporate mechanism to sell the product, which is salvation.
Well, I'm saying I don't accept Satan as an entity myself.
Okay.
I mean, there are Satanists who do look at it like that, but the vast overwhelming majority of Satanists that I interacted with do not believe in Satan as an externalized deity or entity. They see it as what I would call the involutionary force in nature, or in other words, the force that is trying to that they will exploit to prevent the evolution of consciousness forward and maintain their control over it. So you could say that that's a force in nature, or you could look at it as that they're embodying that ideology. They're embodying that adversarial dynamic. And they do this by holding knowledge tight to their chest and keeping it away from other people and keeping other people in ignorance of that knowledge. You know, and they don't even really have to hide it anymore. All they've changed their strategy over the decades. In the modern world, they don't need to sequester that knowledge and kill people who try to receive it. All they need to do is basically dissuade people from looking into it.
And how do they do that? How does this invisible cabal get a whole bunch of people who obviously outnumber them? The cabal is small.
Sure.
The rest of humanity is very large. How do they create a set of programs where even asking certain questions has been forbidden?
Well, you just gave the answer yourself. Programs, media, television. You know, that's the greatest mind control device the world has ever known. And they have to put out a worldview.
We had programming of human beings long before television. Look at the Catholic Church. Look at the Inquisition. Sure. Look at the things that you're not supposed to look into, a la the Cathars, et cetera. In other words, these schisms between institutions long preceded social media and television.
It's even easier for them to control people now through all these mechanisms and technologies.
But we've had that problem
countless generations.
But we had that problem all along. So let me get to a question here. What's the basic, in your view, what's the basic nature of the problem we collectively face as a species if we're going to survive and flourish?
I see it as twofold. It's ignorance and following orders. So remaining in a state of ignorance of the occult in general, of, you know, hidden information, hidden knowledge that we do need to be made aware of so that we can level the playing field and have the information that we need to make good decision making, to put good decision making into practice. The people who don't want the associated personal responsibility that goes along with that knowledge, that's probably the biggest overarching problem. And they choose not to look into the information like what you talk about here on your show and what I talk about in my podcast series and in my videos. But the next big part of the problem is the people who will, for whatever reasons, for their own insecurity, their own fear, or even just for something as mundane as a paycheck, will listen to people who are being coercive and being violent and who are currently in the entrenched positions of power and want to maintain that power with an iron fist. They will actually do their bidding and they will follow their orders. They will do what they are told without thinking about whether the behavior that they are being asked to perform is a moral one or not. And that's what I see as the biggest threat to human freedom are order followers.
Okay. Are they operating under natural law?
Absolutely not. They are completely in violation of natural law because they're taking behaviors that are coercive and violent and often completely destructive of other people's rights. And they're doing that simply because they've, in their own mind, have been somehow absolved of personal responsibility because my superior told me to do it, or it's just my job, or I'm just following orders. None of these are valid excuses, and they should never be accepted as such. These are things that people who are immature at a spiritual level have been trying to offer as justifications for simply behaving in immoral capacities. And this has been going on throughout time. And until we reach people who are willing to do the job of order following and carry out these destructive behaviors, we're not really going to see a reversal in the trend that in the direction that human freedom is going, which is certainly on the wane in our society.
You really think freedom is diminishing as opposed to expanding?
Without any question. I mean, our rights are being decimated as we speak. I mean, you know, you just look at things like, you know, just anything that alters the consciousness being made illegal. I mean, you just think about that. That's slavery. I mean,
as I described at the top of the show, in the next couple, 3 months, at the top of the show, the FDA, as I announced, is going to declassify, potentially deschedule marijuana from equivalent to heroin and other deadly, deadly drugs to something that can be experimented with, that can be researched, that can be used in medical treatments, etc. Is that not a consciousness improvement in our society, given the rate at which this is sweeping over the country? In a matter of months, we've seen this stunning revolution, state after state after state.
I would say it is a small one, but they're doing that because they can no longer essentially keep the lid on the health benefits of cannabis and the curative aspects of cannabis. So they're doing that because they want ultimately to tax all of it and bring it under their control as far as the quality and result of the material and the direction that this is going to go societally. They don't want people to essentially experiment with their consciousness as they see fit. You know, why not any other drug being descheduled? I mean, just think about it. If I want to, and I've never done this in my life, but just let's say I wanted to take some cocaine. Is that not my right to put a substance into my own body that I see fit? What if I wanted to drink some, some household cleaner, you know, that would obviously kill me? Is that anybody's business but my own? Is my body my property? That becomes the fundamental philosophical question.
Well, you would get a Darwin Award.
Yeah, of course. But, you know,
the bigger question, most people are dying these days not because of marijuana or because of cocaine. No one's ever died from marijuana as far as I can find out.
Never.
Or from heroin or from the drugs we know do kill people. More people are killed, according to stats that everybody now is aware of, including the latest information on Prince. It looks like Prince was medicating with opioids for probably a hip problem, given his gymnastics on stage, and he's getting up there, you know, 57. You know, what are the useful years of a stage performer? So he's medicating. We don't know whether it was with a doctor or without a doctor's prescription, like Michael Jackson maybe. And he wound up killing himself inadvertently because it was a prescription drug under medical supervision. That's not where the drug problem is in cocaine. It's in the big pharma drugs. It's in the thousands of people every year who die from overdosing on things that are sold, some of them just over the counter.
Absolutely. I mean, look at alcohol. I mean,
legal. That's the huge – well, that goes back historically to the 20s and to the Rockefellers and to energy and the ability to move biodiesel out of the purview of the ordinary consumer. There was a lot that went into restricting certain medicinal materials. But the marijuana thing – to me, that is the dagger in the heart of the whole strategy, because what is the major thing that happens when people consume marijuana? They begin to think.
Think.
Oh, my God, we can't have that. Of course. I'm seeing now progress. See, you think there's this massive conspiracy where everything is controlled. I think it's a free-for-all. My honest model is, there are folks trying to control everything, and nobody controls anything because it's too slippery, it's too malleable, it's too subject to the vagaries of consciousness, particularly when the physics, the background physics under which we're all living, is modulating now an increase in consciousness all over the world, and that's in our model why we're seeing these amazing revolutionary things going on that are almost now becoming normal. It's like if a day does not go by with a breakthrough or a stunning new announcement or a major trend, you know, shattering paradigm shift, it's like it's an abnormal day. It's normal now to expect the abnormal.
I tend to look at it like it's easy to think that that's happening all around you when the vast, overwhelming bulk of people that you interact with on a daily basis are into this type of subject matter and are open-minded and waking up to the new paradigm. But if you look at the overwhelming numbers of society, very, very, very few people in the aggregate sense are really turning on to the idea that they own themselves and that there shouldn't be any authority over human beings, and that, you know, the ways that we're interacting in society are largely based in coercion when it comes to government interference and intrusion into our lives and our rights. There's so much fear associated with that understanding that, you know, many people don't even want to discuss or talk about it. And the numbers I would suggest are probably lower, but I'm not saying that they're not increasing. Progress is certainly being made in these regards, but I think we have a long way to go before we're going to see any real positive changes taking place.
Historically, in order to make change, I'm talking real major change, national change, you know, cultural, political change, whole countries, whole societies, it's typically only taken about 2%. If you look at the split between the colonists and the royalists back when the country was being founded, the difference was in mere percentage points that tipped the balance to us being who we are now. So if there's more and more conscious people being born or being inculcated to where they realize there's something missing, and they look for aids to assist in figuring out what's missing, and you know, things like marijuana and other drugs are part of their experimentation. The idea that society doesn't want them thinking outside the box, yeah, that's totally deleterious to long-term survival of society, because most societies don't want change. And if the environment changes and you don't, that's a prescription for being dead. So change is fundamental, and it's been too long in coming. But you look around now, Mark, I'm seeing change all over. I mean, you can't look in any direction without seeing amazing change, starting with the whole political process. We're talking about things including, you know, was the whole Iraq war a setup? Are political parties merely a catch-22 that keeps democracy from functioning? Was it designed that way? We're asking questions of each other and the body politic and the voters that have never been asked in my lifetime. I think that's progress.
I think there's a small amount of progress happening, and
I keep saying small. It's taken over television. It's dominating all the media 24/7. How is it small?
Because ultimately people are still voting for masters instead of wanting to ultimately be their own leader and not have any authority figure make decisions about what is or is not acceptable in their lives. They're not ultimately taking personal responsibility at an individual level and are still looking outside themselves for answers and leaders. Until society ultimately does away with the concept of authority, that it is legitimate at all, I don't really see that we're making much progress.
Okay, so we still have a
breakdown of society of masters and slaves based on this concept of authority.
Okay, so let's go to a definition, your definition of what sovereignty is contrasted to what anarchy is.
Absolutely. Sovereignty, the word sovereign really comes from the word sover or super in Latin, which means above, and then regnum in Latin, which means rulership or control. So the word sovereign means outside of the ability to rule over or control, or in other words, above rulership or control by another. Or in other words, not a slave, not someone who is not a subject or subjugated to a master, is a sovereign being. So by that definition, I would make the claim that all sentient beings are sovereign because there is no legitimacy to ruling over anybody. See, there is the
let me be the devil's advocate here. Actually, I'm going to be God's advocate. You never heard someone say they're going to be God's advocate. I'm going to be God's advocate for a moment here.
Okay.
According to religions, various religions, ancient ones, modern ones, the reason we worship beyond ourselves a deity and an entity, a consciousness bigger and grander than us, is because that entity, that consciousness, created us, and by implication, thereby owns us and everything we do. That's the relationship in terms of God's law. How is sovereignty connected or violated by that definition of our relationship to a creator?
I would say because I don't look at the creator and created as anything that is separate. It's all one consciousness. Therefore, since nothing can stand outside of that, nothing can rule over it. There are
So wait. Ultimately, if we take that to the farthest limit of the universe tonight, you're saying that it's all one incredible, complex, virtual reality simulation, and
yes,
God is basically bored. And we are God, and we're bored, and we're trying to keep ourselves from being bored to death because we're going to live forever, and this is one unending, as my friend Gene Roddenberry once termed it, one unending e-ticket.
I would definitely view this as what you might consider a consciousness hologram, as a virtual reality simulation in consciousness at the highest level. It is, however, operating according to law. See, in other words, when people look at the word anarchy, they immediately think lawlessness. And
I tell you what, let's hold the definition of anarchy to the other side of the break. We're at the bottom of the hour. Keith has some more music picked out, interesting music. We'll have a break. We'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation. We'll include your calls if you want to talk to us. If you want to talk to Mark this morning, our phone number, our Skype number is 505-796-8802. Or you can find us on Enterprise Mission or Other Side of Midnight. And you are on the Other Side of Midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And we're back on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning in the wee hours, Mark Passio. I'll get it right before the end of the show, Mark. Okay, so where were we in our cliffhanger?
Well, I was going to explain what anarchy is.
Yes, anarchy. Disorganization. The the presence of overwhelming entropy.
Chaos, right?
Yep.
That's what we've been programmed to believe. That's how mind control works, is you repeat the false definition of a word enough over and over and over again, and eventually in people's minds they accept that as the actual definition of the word. As I was saying before, my worldview is that we're all sovereign. There is no rulership extant in creation, but there is law. It doesn't mean that we are a subject or a slave. It means that there is consequences to what we do. We have free will, but we don't have free will without consequence. So we get to choose what happens to us. In other words, we can make out of this holodeck, if you will, out of this virtual reality simulation, anything we want. We can create hell, or we can create heaven. We can create a paradise, or we can create a prison.
You know, it's so weird. I look at patterns. That's what I do. I look at patterns. I've looked at it for decades. I'm a generalist. I look at patterns in different areas and other fields, and that's why having James Burke on was so amazing, because he's looked at connections and patterns. The patterns I'm seeing now are we're moving at warp 9 somewhere. There's changes all around us. Nothing is static. Nothing is normal. Nothing is just as it's supposed to run. It's all, at every level, it's different. It's unusual. It's amazing. It's like there's this incredible moment in the physics where if a group of people get together and push hard enough, they can imprint their model of reality in this physics as the physics continues to change. So if you take that as an idea, is it not logical, Mark, that there are great forces, huge cultural forces on the planet that would know from historical pattern recognition, science, tracking natural law, whatever you want to call it, that there are moments when you can intercede with consciousness in this physics and you can order or reorder or define or help, assist the construction of a new reality? And
Absolutely.
Is that the moment we're at right now?
I would say so, definitely. I would say that is a time period. It is not one moment in time or one day.
It's
a window of opportunity, without a doubt. A choice point, if you will.
And this is not the first one we've had.
No. I think we've been at this point many, many, many times in our evolutionary development on this planet, without any question in my mind. And, you know, it's the choice of, do we continue doing the same self-destructive things that we've been doing? Do we continue to hold on to dead systems that don't serve who we really are as a people just because it's all we've ever known and it's comfortable and there's no unknown component in it? It's like, you know, it's the devil that we know, so to speak. or do we move into the unknown country? Do we move into uncharted territory, even though it may be uncomfortable at first and new and different, and we might not recognize it and it might not be familiar? And that's the choice, you know. And I think ultimately at the bottom level of this, or the top level, however you want to look at it, is the letting go of this concept of authority. And so many people have a fearful reaction when that is said, because, you know, they look at this concept of anarchy as chaotic and
well. But wait a minute. Authority. I mean, I've been in situations, you have too, where something happens, and everybody's kind of milling around, and most people look to someone else to tell them what's going on, how to stay safe, what needs to be done next. In other words, they need some kind of organization. And
well,
there are people. There are people who are gifted at being organizers. They can take control of a situation, they can become a leader. And then when the crisis is over, they go back to their ordinary lives. They don't they don't adopt it as a lifestyle. They don't go out and, you know, buy a secret cape and then appear in traffic jams to, you know, play Spider-Man. What you're talking about,
that's not what has happened, because if we want to look at it that in a very overwhelming situation or a chaotic situation, people stepped up and became so-called leaders. They certainly didn't relinquish that power, and they wanted to keep all the knowledge and power to themselves and build upon that so that they enslave other people.
Well, we're not talking about any specific situation now. We're talking culturally, historically,
of course,
socially. Okay.
Over
I'm
time.
Talking about specific instances in our lives where something happens. Mm-hmm. We look for leadership if we ourselves don't feel we have it. We give voluntarily our sovereignty to other people to stay safe. We form a community. Someone takes charge. On a ship, it's the captain. And when the crisis is over, we go back to our day jobs. But what you're talking about, Mark, is an institutional authority as a lid on top to forever tell everybody else how high to jump and when. And you're saying that that is not natural.
It's completely unnatural.
So if that's not natural, how have we fallen into this trap?
By not wanting the associated personal responsibility that goes with true freedom, which is anarchy. Anarchy is the only form of true freedom because it is literally the absence of masters and slaves. And that's what the word anarchy means. If you break it down into its Greek etymological roots, the prefix an in Greek means without or the absence of, and the noun archon means ruler or master. And literally, archon means as the ruler over a slave, or the master over a slave, or the ruler over subjects. So the word anarchy does not mean lawlessness. It does not mean the absence of rules. Again, there are always going to be natural, universal, moral laws in effect in the universe that give us the consequences of the behavioral choices that we make through our free will decisions. However, there is no, in nature, there is no rulership or mastery over other beings.
I don't know. If I'm a gazelle and I see a pride of lions, I'm going to make a long detour.
So the animal kingdom is different because they don't have free will and the capacity for holistic intelligence.
Have you ever observed animals up close?
They have the ability to think in a certain aspect, but certainly not the ability to think like a human being can and to recognize the patterns that we can.
How do you know?
Because they're instinctual.
Well, that's what we've been told. Do you know that for a fact?
Does a lion sit there and debate on whether it's moral to eat a gazelle? I don't think that process is happening in the lion's mind.
Coco has.
Instinctually. There are certain animals that may be able to start working up toward that way of thinking.
Interesting. You don't think animals are conscious?
No, I do think they're conscious. I don't think they have the same type of consciousness that human beings do. In other words, natural law ultimately applies to beings in the universe that have the capacity for understanding morality. understanding morality means that the ability to understand morality means you're gifted with the capacity for what I call holistic intelligence, meaning not only intellect or left-brained intelligence, but compassion or right-brained intelligence. You have the ability to understand that the decisions that you make regarding your own behavior can affect others in positive or negative ways. And so that is why natural law applies to human beings, but it does not apply to the so-called animal kingdom. Lower animals are not, if a lion takes down a gazelle on the plains of Africa, they're not going to be judged according to natural law. That's going to happen to human beings because we have a higher level of consciousness and we're going to be held to a higher standard.
Well, when you say held, who's holding us? If we're doing the holding, if God is us, if we're simply... But when you say holding, how are we held accountable?
Because this law is set into motion through creation, and ultimately the effects of it, the consequences of it, aren't escapable at a universal level.
Let me see if I understand this. In other words, if I'm violating the natural law of gravity, if I walk off a building,
right,
the results are very effective and very immediate and very permanent and final.
Right.
That natural law has had its say. My genes do not get passed on. My children, if I ever was going to have any, would not have the proclivities for walking off buildings because those genes that made me think I could fly will not be passed on. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and the same will happen according to moral law. In other words, a society will destroy itself because it doesn't understand morality, and it will make technologies that are destructive, and it will create behaviors that are destructive, and the society will ultimately implode in on itself and destroy itself in one way or another.
Unless there is some authority which decides which technologies, which knowledge, which science for people in our current infantile, very primitive consciousness state, which human beings are. In other words, we are being dealt with by by occult forces like children who are not ready to understand how to build H-bombs.
Unfortunately, the children are making those decisions. See, it's the people of that low consciousness and childlike controlling consciousness, of the angry child who takes out his aggression on the nearest person when he doesn't get his. That child consciousness is in control. It's not about having authority in a society to direct it. It's about the uplift through the dissemination of this heretofore occulted knowledge to level the playing field and help everybody to understand natural law and the laws of morality and the objective difference between right and wrong behavior so we can all move forward into a positive future together.
We have laid out for the last 90 minutes or so, less than, the problem. What is the solution? How can we begin to employ a solution to turn the tide, heal damage, and turn things around in our own lives?
Well, obviously, the first thing is having an open mind to accept information. And then when you start to take in the information that is needed to understand what's really going on,
wrong. When you say information, you're talking television, the internet, friends and family. How do you know what information you can trust if it's all
right.
being controlled?
Great
if
question.
The dark forces are in control, how can
Not
you,
all of
as
it.
One human being, figure it out since you don't have 24/7 to work on figuring out? You got to have a job. You got to make a living.
Yeah,
you got to put your kids through school. It's impossible. So
it's not
how
impossible.
Do you do
it's
it?
It's just it's work. That's why this is called the great work. It's not necessarily something that is fun and is going to make you super bright and happy every day when you understand all the things that have gone wrong in the world. It's something that requires patience, persistence, tenacity, sitting down and exercising discernment, taking in information from a vast array of eclectic sources and comparing and contrasting it and, you know, talking to people and, you know, going to different sources for information and weeding out inconsistencies. It's a time consuming process. It takes work to do. It's a labor of love. That's why more people don't do it. Like you said, a lot of them are on the treadmill and the rat wheel, and they don't have the time or don't want to invest the time. But it is an endeavor that really requires time in order to get a handle on what's really going on. And once that's accomplished,
well,
that's only the beginning of the work.
My Victorian grandmother used to have a saying, if you don't know your furs, know your furrier. That was at a time when wearing fur was not, you know, what it is today, of course. Mm-hmm. If people don't have the time, and they don't, all right? I forget which pope said most people live lives of quiet desperation. If most people are basically consumed by survival or by escapism to combat the incredible ennui of survival, how do they carve out the time to begin to ask the biggest questions? And how can you help? What has given you the tools to pierce the veil and figure out the outlines of what's really running our lives and the world?
Well, I guess the question then becomes, you know, who do you listen to? You know, what sources of information do you go to? It requires somewhat of an intuitive perspective as well, because you have to kind of get a feel for
Kid starts out being curious. So you just have to go back to being a kid and being curious and not saying, oh, I don't want to know that, or, oh, they won't let me see that, or, oh, I shouldn't probably, you know, ask that.
And then you can start with a source that you trust and build from there. And synchronicities will lead you to new information as well. Like when I was going through this research process, and it's still ongoing. I mean, it's not something that ends.
Never ends. Mark, I got to tell you, it never ends.
You know, I gravitated towards certain individuals. And, you know, as an anecdote that's very appropriate for this show, Richard, you were one of the people that helped wake me up out of the former state of consciousness that I was in my youth, because I would listen to you on Coast to Coast with Art Bell all the time and, you know, got a lot of great information from you, read your books and, you know, watched your videos. And, you know, it's like doing things like that, like getting information from someone that you have a feel for and that you resonate with.
So when
and,
you're
–
when,
and then it opens up your vistas of awareness to go and look into other information.
When you're looking at people, because you haven't got the time to do the homework, how do you decide who you're going to follow, who you're going to listen to, and who you're not? What's the procedure? What's your calibration for figuring out who's telling the truth or trying to, and who may not be?
It's a process of essentially taking in the information and then comparing and contrasting. But also you have to run it through different filters. So it's a process. You take it in, you process it, and then ultimately you're going to do something with it in the external world. You're going to take it to other people. You're going to get their take on it. You're going to go and research different sources of that same information and see how it compares and contrasts. It's a process that essentially you have to be willing to put time and effort into. But I think part of it is an intuitive aspect as well. I mean, there's something to be said for that, because you can really, I think, by understanding where someone is coming from in their own consciousness and understanding, the desire that they have for humanity, to better humanity, and to want to put the information that they're putting out into the world, I think you can get a feel for who is doing it in a legitimate sense, and then decide whether it's worth pursuing that in a further way and looking deeper into it. So I think you could do that with a core group of people, and then it will branch out from there organically. Like certain researchers that I looked into when I was quote-unquote waking up led me to such a vast array of information that just that one person being a conduit, you know, broke into so many different subjects.
Hmm.
you know, to research independently, even aside away from their take on it, away from their take on the information in particular. So, and you could do that with a handful of individuals and break out into thousands of areas. Hmm. It's a matter of really, again, one, taking the time to do it, and two, having the desire. That's the main thing, is that the curiosity, the desire, the thirst for knowledge, the thirst for truth, the care for truth. Again, one of the things that has to be present is people have to be disillusioned enough with society to say, wow, they're really...
Well, look around. People are definitely disillusioned, and they're looking for something. So I want to ask you about one thing in particular.
Sure.
When you reach this kind of epiphany, mm-hmm. you looked at a film, The Wizard of Oz, and you've seen patterns in The Wizard of Oz that I'd like you to share with the audience.
Sure. I think... You know, I did a presentation on the Wizard of Oz film back as a fundraiser for the first Free Your Mind conference, a conference in the Philadelphia area, which I co-founded and helped to organize in the first few years of its development. So I did a presentation on the Wizard of Oz because I thought that it was probably the best spiritual allegory or you know, kind of coded moral story that I have seen out there in popular fiction. And so many people that I knew personally and who I came across through my work resonated with this film and did not understand how or why they resonated with it. They were resonating with it at a subconscious level.
I remember growing up as a kid, and you know, we didn't have television for a long time, and then my father and mother broke down, and they got us this old black and white, you know, Zenith set with the rabbit ears and all that. And I remember I look at patterns.
Right.
Every year, CBS would run The Wizard of Oz in black and white on CBS television, every year, like clockwork, in the fall. And I began to wonder, after two or three years, why are they? Because I watched the film. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting. It was fun. It was, you know, Dorothy was alluring. The everything, the witches. But it was like it. I wasn't old enough to realize what the central point of the film was until I got up in my teens, and then it was like, oh my God, there's this invisible guy running everything in this place that she wound up, and it's nothing like home.
Right.
It turns out. Maybe it is.
Even more fundamental to the allegory is the aspects of the self that it conveys, because the entire point of the film is really about the occulted information about self, about who we really are, and ultimately about the components of our consciousness that we don't really ever fundamentally consciously explore. And those three elements are our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. These are the three ways that humanity needs to work upon itself, and individuals need to work upon themselves in order to evolve. We need to work upon our thought processes, and that is a desire for truth. That is wanting to understand, you know, so that's, you know, the fundamental desire to better ourselves by taking in information and truth and doing something with it. Then we have our emotions, and that's the heart. So, I mean, if you look at just the thought aspect, or the, you know, having a good working mind, that is represented by the character of the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz, who wants a brain. You know, he wants to be better in thought and in his ability to understand things. Then we have the emotions. That's the heart aspect. You know, this is care, compassion for other people. And if that's, you know, frozen and locked up, then, you know, people act, apathetically and don't care about what their actions are or whether they're moral or not. And, you know, the being in The Wizard of Oz that represents the heart is the Tin Man. He wants a heart. He wants feelings. He wants emotions. And then, of course, you know, you have to do something with your thoughts and emotions, what you've come to care about, what you've come to know. And that's your actions, your behaviors in the world that affect other people. And you have to have courage to put that out into the world and willpower to do things. and to get things done and to get things accomplished. And that is represented by the lion, the cowardly lion, who wants courage to act in the right capacity, in a moral capacity. So, we're talking about really veiled, allegorically veiled aspects of consciousness in this story. And Dorothy represents the soul. You know, she is trying to get back to where she needs to be, home, which is, you know, a world of freedom and order and goodness.
Mm.
And, you know, she encounters all of this, strife along the way, but has to meet these aspects of herself, thought, emotion, and action, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Cowardly Lion, respectively. And, you know, then it gets into the whole idea of authority, that this being is acting as, you know, some sort of godlike creature and really doesn't have any it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all a house of cards. It's all illegitimate. And, you know, all the abilities and powers that she needed to really get herself where she needed to go are already with her. And he's only giving them, at the end of the movie, he's giving them little proxy gifts, you know, trying to represent externally what they have inside themselves already. So the whole aspect that, you know, we don't need a leader, we don't need a master, we don't need, you know, someone that acts as, a wizard over us.
I mean, this is so incredibly appropriate because, Mark, you know, you're on now one night after Trump basically has sewn up the Republican nomination. Isn't Donald Trump the personification of the guy behind the curtain in Oz?
Right.
A guy who says, I'll solve all your problems. I'll get rid of ISIS. We'll build a wall. There'll be no more competition. Jobs are coming back. I mean, I look at this list, and it's like I'm watching The Wizard of Oz and people being mesmerized. I'm watching people very close up. I'm watching people being mesmerized by this individual. And I'm wondering, again, are we looking, Mark, at potential dark forces that are reaching out and somehow linking minds to think this guy is the guy in Oz?
I'm not going to try to speak to the individual's character. I'm just going to say that any time that there is the belief in authority, which is an illusion and doesn't exist in nature or reality, there is always going to be potential for dark forces taking over. That's why we have to get rid of the notion itself. The whole idea of government, the whole idea of authority is illegitimate on its face.
I'll tell you what, we've got to have you back to talk about this at some greater length because we're running out of time. There's our music. If you go to othersideofmidnight.com, Radio with Pictures, you'll see a whole bunch of links under Mark Passio, What on Earth is Happening, Free Your Mind Conference, etc., etc. I'm sorry I didn't include calls, but our conversation was moving in interesting directions. I didn't want to lose track. Again, tomorrow morning, back same time, same channel. Thanks, Mark, for being our guest. Everyone out there on the planet, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.